Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome, this is Way of the Dreamer, the radio show where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. This is Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest today is Kimberly Mascaro. I'll call her Kim, as her friends tend to do. She's a therapist. She's worked with the University of Arizona for many years, State University of Arizona. She's led groups for women survivors. She's done doctoral work with women in pregnancy on their dreams. And her book, her new book, is titled Extraordinary Dreams. The subtitle is interesting, Visions, Announcements, and Premonitions Across Time and Place. My dog ran in now, very interested. As a matter of fact, one of the main themes of the book is what Kim calls announcing dreams. I was thinking about the pedigree of the word announcing as an announcement. It's a proclamation. It's a declaration. It's news. And in its Latin origin, it goes back to something brought to you by a nuntio, which the Vatican calls a nuncio, a messenger, something coming through. So part of Kim's theme is that we receive dreams. We are in dreams. Dreams come to us, which are messages or messengers about important things like birth, like death, like life changes. And in our contemporary society, we regard these dreams as extraordinary, and they might be in their effect on our lives. They might indeed be extraordinary. I mean, a dream that announces a birth or death is far beyond the ordinary. But one of the things I think she'd agree with, having just thought the anthropology she's read and studied in her book, is that for most human societies, for most of history, much of what the modern society might regard as out of the ordinary is not particularly out of the ordinary at all. Just a quick story from myself before I bring Kim in. When I started dreaming in an archaic version of the Mohawk language more than 30 years ago, a language I had to study and master because of my dreams, because the person who was trying to communicate with me insisted in speaking in her language from centuries ago, archaic Mohawk with some Huron vocabulary in it, when I started dreaming of her and transliterating what she told me and finding people to help me translate it, I talked to an elder of at Onondaga, the traditional capital of the Six Nations of the Haudenosaunee, the Longhouse people, or Iroquois. I told him my experiences, and he said matter-of-factly, this is someone from an indigenous dreaming tradition, he said matter-of-fact, oh yes, you made some visits and you received some visitations. And Kim will, I think, resonate with this. We're hearing from an ancient tradition, which all our ancestors shared once upon a time, that dreaming is traveling. In dreams, we receive visitations. In dreams, we make visits. We make excursions. And that's part of what goes on. So it's both ordinary and extraordinary. Extraordinary when the dream involves a big event, but not so extraordinary from an ancient and indigenous perspective to think that we get around in dreams. We don't just, you know, dream up psychological symbols. We don't just process the dross from the day before. More is going on. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Robert. And yes,
I want to take people right into your lived experience of these things by getting you to talk about one of the stories you include in your book, because I'm very pleased that you have some of your personal dreams in the book, because like Mark Twain, I don't want to hear about the moon from someone who hasn't been there. One of your stories, I hope you remember this, involves the death of an elderly neighbor of yours when you were living in Phoenix, Arizona, and you caught him.
Yes.
And you dreamed about him. Tell us that story.
Well, it was interesting because I didn't know this man too well, and he had lived a few doors down. We were in a kind of a townhouse complex together, And I'd walk by, and I knew he was a spiritual man because I saw him sitting outside, and I'd walk by and say hello, and he would tell me how he's, you know, talking or communing with his wife who had already died. And so we would exchange pleasantries like that from time to time. And shortly after his death, I was doing, you know, a lot of active dream work at that time. And shortly after his death, I just had a dream where it was very, very vivid. And I looked out my window and he was approaching me. I knew in the dream, though, he had already died. But it gave me a really, really warm sense. He looked great. He looked a bit younger, wasn't walking with such trouble as he had when I had last seen him in his physical body, and, you know, approached, and there was really no, like, you know, conversation or anything. It was kind of like an exchange, you know, in the mind, and, you know, I knew he was okay. I knew he was happy. I knew he was doing well, and, there he was in the courtyard, and so when I woke up, I had just a really warm feeling, but also the dream being so vivid and so, it's hard to put these in words when you have that matter-of-fact feeling. Like, you felt like, you know, you really visited someone. It wasn't just a thought. You know, he was
Well, that's what I wanted to hear you say. And to paraphrase you, I don't have the page open in the book at the moment, you say at the end of your narrative in the book, this is one of those experiences, or perhaps the first experience, that gave you personal confidence in the survival of consciousness after physical death. That's why I asked you to tell that story. Because that is so important. This is one of the things that humans have learned from dreams through the whole history of our evolution on the planet. They have learned from dreams, or come to believe through dreams, if you want to be more cautious about the statement, that when we encounter the deceased in our dreams, or seem to travel to realms where they're at home, as you may have done in your dream, but this is evidence, first-hand evidence, based on the authority of first-hand experience, that soul or consciousness survives physical death. And when we know that, our attitude towards everything is likely to be different. So this is one sense in which, you know, your subtitle, your theme of announcing dreams is so important. Everybody listening is going to be fascinated by the depth of your work and the degree of your passionate interest in the dreams of people who are going to have babies, both the mothers and the fathers, and sometimes others involved in the family. So let me just step back for a moment, let you talk about that theme for a moment, what you have discovered. You did doctoral work on this, and I think your involvement is also personal and familial as well. Tell us what you've come to believe or come to understand about the relationship between dreaming, pregnancy, bringing a new child into the world.
Well, you know, Robert, it was really interesting. I had no plan to do this. The dreams were just being told to me by people, someone in my family, friends, and I would just say acquaintances or people, you know, acquaintances would be probably the best word, you know, someone I had met once or twice. And so some of the dreams really struck me how unique they were. And I had believed that maybe these were, you know, unique, but the more digging I did, I found that announcing dreams were quite common and had a long, you know, history. So some of the interesting points from my research were, for example, a friend's dream. She dreamed of a group of children, and she this was around conception. She had dreamed of a group of children, but knew in the dream that one of those children belonged to her. It was her child, not, you know, it was distinct from the other group of children. And she kind of made a joke how all the other children were, you know, playing nicely, and this particular child was rambunctious, but she knew this one was connected to her and that it was the baby coming. And so, you know, we laughed at that. But there's something that I just found so interesting about how these women, if there were more than one child, they knew which one was theirs. There was no mistake in their mind that the child belonged to them. It was the child they were carrying or about to carry. And I'll share another story with you, which was actually a family member who dreamed of very quickly, kind of in a flash, saw a newborn and got the message, I'm not your baby, and had a miscarriage. And then some months later, quicker than she expected because, you know, the doctor said, oh, with this kind of miscarriage, you won't be, you know, probably getting pregnant so soon. But then soon had another dream that where this time the child said, I am your baby. It was male this time, not female, and offered his name. And she said, okay, you know, and woke up. And that child stuck around. And so some months later, she birthed that male child. So those are just a couple examples of some of the first announcing dreams that were told to me. Would you like me to share others at this point?
Well, yes. We'll come back. We'll give you a second and third wave, Kim, because these stories are so interesting. We learn by stories. So we're talking, as I understand it, correct me if this is not an accurate presentation of your point of view, we're talking about transpersonal dreams in which, for example, a parent, sometimes a mother, sometimes a father, someone else who's a spiritual parent who might be closely involved also, is having an encounter possibly with the incoming spirit or consciousness, and in that process is learning something about the identity of the child who's coming into the world. It becomes a bonding experience, as you elegantly described several times. I'll give you a story of my own just to take this a little bit further. I have three daughters. Both my wives, I had two wives and three daughters, both my wives and I had dreams along the way to the birth of those children. I'll just tell one of them. When she was 5 months pregnant, my wife dreamed that she met a golden child who looked about 2 years old. Actually, I was keeping my vampire hours reading at 3 o'clock in the morning. She walked into my study and said, Robert, if it's a girl, can we call her Sophie? And I said, tell me the dream. Said, well, I just dreamed. She's 5 months along into the pregnancy. But I see a golden child about 2 years old. At that moment, I see her, too. It's a waking vision in the half-light of a firelit room, actually. And she says, my wife says, she says, my name is Sophie, get it right. Now, at that moment, we knew several things. We knew the gender of the child, which we had not checked. We knew the name that she wanted, and we gave that name. We gave her that name. Not Sophia, it means the same thing, wisdom, but it's Sophie, not Sophia, not get it right. And we knew her personality. And when she was 2 years old, she looked exactly like the child that my wife had seen in the dream and that I had seen in the vision that corresponded to the dream. So I know in my own family history that this works, and we have no doubt whatsoever that this was the spiritual consciousness of the child who chosen to come into this world through us, announcing itself. So it is an announcing dream. And I've had the privilege in my rambles and wanderings of hearing many, many such dreams. Some of the dreams you report in your book involve animals. I mean, you're going through the pregnancy, and sometimes the dreams might be analogs for the physical condition of the baby, dreams of fish and things, of tadpoles and things like that. But there's a lovely one where one of your subjects, I think this is in the survey you were doing for your announcing dreams doctoral work, somebody dreams that she has a Springer Spaniel she's going to give birth to. And the Springer Spaniel, as I recall, is sort of digging and burrowing and scratching and trying to get its way out. I mean, animal dreams in pregnancy are so interesting to me. Do you have any more stories about that or thoughts about that?
Well, I don't have too many, but I do know it's common. And I do know animals appear quite often in pregnancy dreams in general, and also among Taemong. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, but those are Korean birth dreams. And so there are several animals that do appear.
Well, of course, in traditional shamanic cultures, one of the things that might be going on when the parent is dreaming of an animal is that you're dreaming of the animal spirit, the animal guardian, the animal counterpart, the bush soul, Aborigines would say, of the incoming child. So this is not just an analog for what's going on in the womb. It's part of the spiritual family, the spiritual identity of the baby who is coming. That's very much a belief in many indigenous traditions that I know about, and I've dreamed of some of my own children in terms of animal counterparts. But I'm thinking about a very funny one, which is perhaps more about the preparing, rehearsing for the delivery process. I was on a TV show with an anchor woman in St. Louis some years ago. She said, Robert, and she was pregnant at the time, said, Robert, I've been dreaming that I've been giving birth to animals. Is that okay? And I said, tell me. I said, well, I dreamed most recently that I gave birth to a lizard. I said, how was it? Well, slippery. It slipped out just like that. I said, well, if that's my dream and I'm in your condition, I'm going to take confidence from that the delivery is going to be slick and slippery and easy because a lizard is slick and slippery and can survive all sorts of things. She emailed me after the birth. She said, exactly as we had discussed. the baby came out as easily and slippery and slick as a lizard. So that's a nice example of a dream preparing someone, coaching someone for the delivery process and giving them confidence, and giving them really a heads up that all will be well.
And in some traditions, the animal, like you said, the, you know, maybe the spirit associated with that child, the animal spirit of that child, can give maybe a hint as to the characteristics,
sure,
the way the
absolutely
child may develop. Uh-huh. You know,
that's something I've always discussed with a certain kind of animal dream, whether it's about pregnancy or something else. What do we know about the habits of this animal? Let's research it. Let's study its nature. Let's study its role in legends and mythology. Let's consider its eating, mating, social, nocturnal,
yes,
habits, etc., and see whether we're learning something for ourselves or the incoming child or whatever else it relates to from the behavior and nature of the animal. This can be so educational. And then, of course, there is a shamanic dimension, which you're not alien to, which is we do have different kinds of spiritual support, and that might include the animal spirits or the animal guardians. Very good to be introduced to them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, something you said about your announcing dream with Sophie about it triggered a memory about how some other women had also told me that the image, those that got an image of the child in the dream was, you know, was what they looked like around maybe the age of a toddler or a little after. And I found that to be the case in many of the dream reports that were shared with me. That, and sometimes there were even a surprise, like the child had a particular hair color or something that was a surprise. Like one Apache woman, the child was in her announcing dream, the child had dark hair, and she was surprised by that because her husband was blonde, but yet, you know, the child ended up with very, very dark hair like hers. And so there were other, you know, dreams that had characteristics like that, where what the dream they saw of the child was exactly like what the child looked at, maybe around the age of 2 or 3 or even 4.
So we're talking about dreams that address what are sometimes called the mortal questions, I mean the big questions, life, death, birth, all of that. And this is such important information. And one of the, and there is a transpersonal dimension to it, which is lost in some of Western psychology, of course completely lost in reductionist approaches, which don't understand what's going on in dreaming at all and think it's all a matter of what's going on in the brain and there's no larger mind. One of the interesting passages in your book is where you quote extensively an acquaintance who's a practitioner of the Lukumi Afro-Cuban tradition. I know a bit about that, too. I have connections in these areas, too, Kim. And this person says to you at a certain point that he wants to talk about dreaming with, not dreaming of the dead, dreaming
oh,
with
yes,
the
and that's a woman.
Baby, dreaming with the spirit. I've spoken this way all my life. In fact, in my very first book on all of this conscious dreaming 32 years ago, there's a chapter called Dreaming with the Departed. I was delighted to see a similar approach here because, again, this is revolutionary from the point of view of some Western psychology, but it's common knowledge in ancient indigenous traditions. We don't just dream of the dead, don't just dream of the spirit of the child. We dream with them. It's a social interactive process. And once we can rise to that understanding or go back to that primal understanding, which probably all of our ancestors understood, we're far better equipped to work with what dreams are really giving us. So I was very glad to see that element in your book.
Yes, absolutely.
Dreaming
yes,
with the departed, dreaming with the incoming child. And, of course, you know, when you talk about extraordinary dreams, and again, I'm going to stress that for me the value of the word extraordinary is in the effect of the dream at a certain stage in life in relation to the big issues. You also talk about, you know, dreams that have been announcing, messaging, proclaiming in relation to important life issues. One of your personal examples is of a dream that I think, as I recall, led you to say goodbye to a certain job. Do you remember that one?
Are you recalling? I've had jobs that have directed me in many, in many life events. So, job definitely being and career being one of them. But I've had a couple. Are you thinking of the tornado dream?
No, I was thinking of the tornado dream. I was thinking of another one. It wasn't quite as dramatic as a tornado, but we don't need to focus on a particular narrative. Let's just take the theme. you have written
okay.
about dreams which guided you on major life decisions like whether to continue in a certain line of work or leave it.
Yes, there was one with some light coming through the bottom of the floor, too.
Oh, that's right, yes. Well, you think you're going to fall through the floor. You've just reminded me what
yes.
it is. I have a good memory, but it's not impeccable. You notice there's a little hole in the floor, and you realize you could fall through the floor, and this leads you to make a decision about the work environment you're in.
Yes. I believe it was the dream of that had to do with a tornado. It was a little later. That I think it was after the book. But you know how it is, Robert, when you're writing the dreams of yours and other people's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dreams. For you, I'm just thousands and thousands. Sometimes, yeah, it's hard to recall which one. But the general
well,
thing that you
it's the theme that, I mean, I like the element
yes.
of discovering that you
yes.
might be about to fall through the floor. That's why that one came to my mind, though I'd lost the details for a moment. But the important theme is that dreams can give us guidance on essential life decisions. They can give us a witness perspective. They can dramatize things in an effective way. And here we might be talking about a different type of dream from the transpersonal excursion where you get out and meet the dead or something like that. We might be talking here about the operations of a dream movie company behind the scenes that is putting together dramas and films for us to watch and enter experientially so we'll learn something more than we already know. I look at a certain kind of teaching dream, which can be, you know, very, very reorienting in a life. For example, in my life, when I was gearing up to take the decision to step out of my extremely, extremely luxurious life as a New York Times best-selling thriller writer and do something else with my talents, that was still sort of hesitating because, you know, where's the money? Got to put some more money in the bank. Thriller for big bucks, and it wasn't going well. So I asked for a dream to guide me. And in my dream, I'm in a banquet hall. It's a very elegant banquet hall. It's the tables are set up for hundreds of people. Everything is exquisite. The silverware appears to be real silver and gold. It's extraordinary. The maitre d' comes up trembling through his whole body. I say, what's the matter? He says, Mr. Moss, the master chef doesn't like your menu. He's not going to cook any more stroganoff. If you insist on this menu, he won't be here. I wake up from the dream, horrified and laughing, because I was trying to write a Russian thriller. I wrote a best-selling Russian thriller. Trying to write another one for some money. I learn from the dream that my master chef, who I understand to be my creative source, will not be around if I intend to go on with that repetition. So I tore up the contract, sent back the advance, and gone on the rest of my life. We're talking to Kimberly Mascaro. Her new book is Extraordinary Dreams. We're talking about our own experiences of extraordinary dreams. This is Robert Knott. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. We'll be back for more after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right, you can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Well, Welcome back. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Mouse. Our wonderful guest is Kimberly Mascaro. Her book is Extraordinary Dreams. You can get it now. I recommend it. We have entered the subject of dreams of guidance. And let's remember again, Kim likes this phrase, announcing dreams. Those of you with any kind of religious upbringing will remember the word annunciation. I should proclaim this show, Kim, to be under the patronage of Gabrielle, actually. I don't think Gabrielle's mentioned in your book. But Gabrielle, of course, is the archangel of dreams and astral travel and the patron of dreams in all three religions of the book, the Jews, Christians, and Muslims. And it is the angel, though he's not actually named in the biblical text, who whispers to the Holy Family what is going on with the arrival of Jesus. We're talking now about the arrival of news in various senses, the arrival of news about birth, about death, and about life guidance, dreams that announce something we need to know in order to make crucial life decisions. So, Kim, talk to us more about that. I mean, about dreams of guidance that can give us what we need in order to make the right choice at a certain turning point in life.
Well, especially, you know, related to career, like we were saying, I've had a couple dreams that have just, you know, when something didn't feel right at a particular job or an agency I was working for, I looked to my dreams to help guide me and make decisions about what I should do. And I did have a couple that led me to, you know, leave agencies I was working for and take a different direction. But I really, you know, the real important piece was that is that I trust my dreams. I listen to them, I believe them, I follow them, and I really trust them. And so even when they steer me in a direction that might feel a little uncomfortable or scary, I just trust that that's the way to go. So, I mean, the tornadoes on the cover of the book, there's a tornado, and that has to do with one of the dreams. And then in the book, I talk about one where the floor is breaking away, but I'm held up, you know, by light. And that's another example of just some of the experiences that happened in that dream that led me to have a bigger understanding of what I should do next. And dreams have also, you know, dare I say, guided me in my romantic relationships.
I would hope so.
Yes.
I was just looking at the cover of your book. I hadn't noticed the tornado. I'm still not sure I see it as a tornado because the big cat at the center is so dominant.
Yes, that's the mountain lion that appears often. The tornado is kind of that light-colored strip between the fire, the picture of the fire, and the mountain lion head.
Oh, I see it now, just, yes.
Yes,
well, the mountain lion claims precedence, and actually that's important for me because not only do I feel connected to the whole family of big cats, not particularly the mountain lion, but a dream of a mountain lion was a turning point dream for me in my life, which guided a huge decision I made, both personal and professional. I won't tell the details right now, but the mountain lion, I was actually teaching at Esalen, which is in mountain lion territory, and the mountain lion pulled me up to the top of a cliff where I could see things from the heart and look at things differently. So I painted that dream, and I've actually used it in dream transfer, gifting a dream to people who need a dream. So you just talked about how you turn to dreams for guidance in your personal and professional life and so on, which means probably that you have a practice of dream incubation, yes, setting an intention for the night, that kind of thing.
Definitely, yes, and I do.
How do you do that? Lots of people listening might or might not have such a practice. So tell us how you set about asking your dreams for guidance on an issue.
Well, it starts with some general sleep hygiene, which for me is to keep the electronics out of the room. And, you know, I have some kind of spritzers I make with my essential oils and really trying, you know, kind of clear that space and just keep the space clean and protected with the different plants and oil elements I use. And then from there, often I'll just ask out loud. I'll sometimes write even a note and just put, you know, a little 3x5 card or a piece of paper about what I want to incubate and put that under my pillow and even think about, you know, that as I'm kind of drifting off. So those are you know, some things that I do to try to incubate a dream or, you know, ask for assistance.
How often do you do this kind of thing?
Well, the general, I would say some of the foundational things I would do almost every night, but maybe I would say with the paper, not as often. A lot of times I'll do it more mentally, asking, you know, praying or having my, you know, I have my dream diary right by my bed with some colorful pens. So I kind of really set up the space. I also use rock and, you know, different crystal type elements as well. I really take my little, and it's a tiny bedroom, but I really take it as a sleep temple, and try to set it up in a way that is going to really bring in the best dreams, the most healing and clear dreams possible.
And when you get the most useful or important dreams or images, extraordinary dreams, do they come in sleep? Do they come between sleep and awake? I mean, do they come in a certain time of night? Can you say something about that?
Yes. Mine, I would say 99% of the time, it seems, are in the early morning hours. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, I'll go to sleep. I'll wake up, you know, 5-6 hours later, use the bathroom, have some water, go back to bed, and that's typically when I get the best dreams. Also, when I have more of a, I'll just say lucid dreaming, or some people call it out of body. It's just, you know, so many names for all of this. Soul travel practice, I think I prefer, would be in those morning hours too. I needed to be well rested. And if I was going to do any kind of dream work where I wanted to stay conscious, it would typically be happening after sunrise.
Right. Well, actually, the ancients gave special attention to the dreams that come in the last phase of sleep, including in a stage of hypnopompia when you are rising from sleep because, you know, you flushed away. You lead such a clean life, Kim, I know this doesn't apply to you, but you flushed away any toxins from what you're eating and drinking the day before. You've had your industrial sleep. Your body is rested. So prime time for the ancients to get the big message is actually that last phase of sleep and the phase of drifty, dozy, lethargic, horizontal meditation maybe that follows sleep. So you're with a very ancient tradition in saying that. Now, in your book, you borrow Charlie Lockton's stuff about biphasic versus polyphasic cultures. Mm-hmm. I would actually say that most human cultures until recently have been polyphasic or biphasic cultures, not monophasic. I better slow down. What are we talking about? We're talking about, you know, how many periods of sleep are standard or common or even recommended in a culture in modern Western society where we talk about sleep deprivation so much. Some people seem to think we're meant to drug ourselves or program ourselves to lie down like the dead for 6, 7, or 8 hours, and that's it. Most humans, for most of our evolution on the planet, have slept in at least 2 distinct phases of sleep, maybe more. I don't know about you, but I've always been a polyphasic sleeper. I don't sleep for long periods of time, hardly ever. I rarely sleep for more than 2 or 3 hours, and this goes back to, as far as I can remember, into childhood. So, you know, if I can't manage a nap during the day, sometimes I can be sleep deprived because I have interesting things to do in the middle of the night, including writing down the dreams from one phase of sleep and drawing from those dreams and so on. So I would think, I mean, I haven't done the kind of survey work that you do because I don't prove things that way. I evidence things by direct experience and observation of people who work with me. But from the observation of hundreds and hundreds of dreamers who've shared with me experientially in workshops and so on, I would say that the most prolific dreamers, the most powerful dreamers, are people who are accustomed to sleeping in more than one band of sleep. I mean, they're biphasic or polyphasic sleepers, whether that means in one night or doing something in the night and something for an hour or two during the day. Do you have opinions about that?
Well, a lot of dreamers I know do get some of their most insightful experiences during a nap time in the day. For me, maybe I don't want to say biphasic or polyphasic because for the most of my life, usually dictated by a particular job of some sort, would lead me to do the, you know, midnight to 8 a.m. type of cycle.
Mm.
But I do notice, though, when I had time, it was mostly when my dreams were most active, because I'm in a bit of a slump now, but when my dreams were most active, I would, you know, get some of those solid hours at night just from being pretty tired. But then again, it was well after sunrise that if I went and lied back down, that is when, and also, you know, in those kind of intermediary states when I would get the most clear dreams, the most clear instruction or, you know, vividness or contact with other people. So,
right.
Yes. go on.
You, one of the things you notice in your survey of the anthropological material on dreaming in the book is that in many cultures, dreaming is not just a phenomenon that goes on during the night or a phenomenon that goes on during sleep. It can happen any time. And I'm reminded of ancient Egyptian invocations to the dream source, whether they're addressed to a named goddess or to something else, which basically ask for a good dream by night or by day. That's the phrase that's used in the ancient invocations. And when you look at Egyptian texts relating to interesting, important dreams, sometimes they're being dreamed in the middle of the day. A pharaoh lies under the shadow of the Sphinx and has a big dream in the middle of the day. So we're not confined to thinking about dreaming as a function of the night, and I think you and I probably agree that the dream is not only a function of what happens during sleep. There are different modes of dreaming, including lucid dreaming, for which there's quite a buzz these days. And when we come back, we'll talk to Kimberly Mascara about approaches to lucid dreaming, her own experience of this, how it relates to phenomena like the out-of-body experience, and how we can perhaps be more conscious choosers of what we're doing in any phase of reality and consciousness. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our guest is Kimberly Mascara. Her book is Extraordinary Dreams, subtitled Visions, Announcements, and Premonitions Across Time and Place. We're beginning to talk about lucid dreaming and modes of dreaming beyond the sleep dream. Let me just say by way of further introduction, Kim, a lot of my most creative time is spent in the hypnagogic state, in the place between sleep and awake. I mean, I have wonderful adventures there. I find images pop up. If I choose one and like it, I can enter a lucid dream adventure just like that. I make creative connections. I feel myself in contact with transpersonal source. This has gone on all my life. However, just to validate the sleep dream, one of the things I treasure about the spontaneous sleep dream, the one you do not ask for, maybe, and the one you may not want, and the one that is in no way controlled by you, is that it has a certain objectivity. It gives you a certain witness perspective. Sometimes it's shocking or wildly funny or humiliating, but it gives you what you need to know. So I have great respect for the spontaneous sleep dream, and I have great disaffection from any approach to dreams that wants to control and manipulate what is going on in a larger field of consciousness. Having said that, I'm in favor of us waking up to the fact that we have power of choice, power to choose, power to navigate whatever state of consciousness or reality we are in. And that, to me, is more important than the business of knowing whether I'm dreaming inside a dream. From my point of view, I'm dreaming right now as I talk to you on the phone. I mean, everything for me is a kind of dreaming. It's a seamless web. But what I want to do and encourage other people to do is be more conscious about the choices you are making. Never give in to the thought that you are driven or determined or a victim of things. Now, you're very interested in lucid dreaming. You do a lot of it. You're also interested in the out-of-body experience and astral travel. Talk to us a little bit about your practice first and foremost in relation to these things.
Well, for those terms, and back when I was taught some of this stuff, the, you know, different groups were doing different names, and that led to some confusion for me. But nonetheless, the practice that I was taught, it was a group by a group of people who, identified as Gnostic mystics, and they used the terms out of body, and they used the terms, astral travel. And they taught us to do lots of, I guess it would be vow mantras, and really setting up our body in the day to have these types of visions and dreams. And so I didn't really have much experience with this at all. You know, I just had lots of, ordinary dreams and didn't think a whole lot of them. But when I started to spend time around this group, and really I had meditation practice before that and some martial arts training, so there was a lot of meditation in that, Tai Chi and things like that. So through these practices, I was finding that I could stay much more focused as the body would relax, and abilities to concentrate would increase. Also was learning how to deeply relax the body, and I was training in hypnosis for some of the time, and so I was learning a lot at that time about what my body and mind could do. And so combining some of those techniques led me to having my first really powerful experience, which at the time I called out of body. And, where you can really feel your physical body stop breathing, and you feel, some people talk about feeling vibrations and hearing sounds, but for me, I could really, kind of feel those sensations in the body more than hear, and be able to have an experience where I was completely, it was like being awake, but very different, experiencing a whole nother world where gravity did not confine me, and I could see into places that and see creatures and experience things that I had not ever experienced before. So that particular, my first, I'll just call it out of body, my first experience led me to go, okay, this is real. This is not, this is no joke. This is real. And if I keep practicing certain types of techniques, I can do this again. And so I would continue. I would continue upping meditation techniques, concentrative meditation as well as mindfulness and movement meditation, practicing type ways to relax the body, recording everything I remember into a journal, a dream diary, and going from there. And so then I would have more and more, and I got to, really see that, really, I don't come to any conclusion, but really learn that the mind is not what I thought it was. The psyche and the soul and what I see with my two eyes in my head is not all there is. I'll just say, not all there is to life. And so the adventures continued.
Right. Well, I mean, there are probably two great modes of learning that through experience, learning that the mind is not in the brain and the body. The brain is inside the mind, and we're not confined to the body. One is through the out-of-body experience, the shamanic journey, perhaps, and one is through mind expansion, I mean, expanding your field of consciousness to encompass whatever you're thinking about. They're different. They're not the same. But if you can understand that your mind can expand the field wherever it needs to go and bring things inside that field, that's a way of knowing. The mind is larger than the body and the brain. The experience of astral projection or out-of-body experience is more dramatic, probably, in early stages. So people aren't used to it. It might come in the early stages, as you said, with bumps and grinds. People who came to this through journeys out of the body, through Bob Munro's work, for example, were almost sort of programmed by his excellent, the challenging book, to expect bumps and grinds and all that kind of thing, and they got them. We come at this from so many different points across the spectrum. I mean, in my life, because I'm someone who was pronounced clinically dead twice in childhood and had something more than I think the typical NDE is supposed to be, my challenge in life has not been to leave the body, Kim, it's been to stay in it. So I have known a first-hand experience since I was 3 years old that we're not...
Yeah, I had to work really hard to leave.
Yes, I've had to find ways of keeping myself, of anchoring myself, and not taking off. So, and I appreciate that amongst the vast variety of people I meet, there are people who understand that very well. I also meet people whose only out of body experience so far has been a bowel movement that would like to know more. So we come at these things from a different array of experience and preparation, and we come at these things from a different degree of anamnesis. That difficult word means remembering, in the sense of remembering the knowledge that belongs to us on the level of soul and spirit. When I was a strange, lonely young teen in my native Australia, one of my invisible companions was a Neoplatonist philosopher who appeared as a beautiful young man from the eastern side of the Mediterranean. He told me one of the things that lived with me ever since. He said, everything that matters that you need to know will come to you from anamnesis. And I had to look it up, of course. It's in English dictionaries, but it's not a household word. It means remembering. But in the doctrine of the Neoplatonists and the Pythagoreans, it means remembering the knowledge that belonged to you before you came here. So for me, at the heart of it, I mean, the role of dreaming in all its modalities we're talking about, the role of meditation in all its modalities, the role of seeking knowledge is to remember, to practice anamnesis of the essential things that we understand on a higher level of reality, maybe that we understood on the level of reality we were in before we decided under some kind of agreement, perhaps, to come into the body. So beyond all the other purposes of dreaming and consciousness expansion that we've been discussing, that's what it's about for me. Hmm. I learned also, because I don't have an organizational connection. I've evolved hierarchies and initiatory orders in this body in this lifetime. I feel I've done too much of that in other lives. But I also grew up feeling connected to Western mystery tradition, which draws between astral projection and astral travel. Are you following me on this? Astral projection is the out-of-body thing. You're going to project yourself out of the body, maybe even lose track of the body for a while. Astral travel is when you can travel around wherever you want to go, maybe in a subtle body, astral body, but keep a conscious connection with the physical body at the same time. In that particular mystery tradition, I feel connected to astral projection was never praised, never encouraged. Astral travel, the ability to shift consciousness and go where you need to go, was highly valued. All right, we've gone into deep and difficult and fascinating things. We're talking to Kimberly Mascaro. Kim Mascaro, her book is Extraordinary Dreams. We'll be back for a little while after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
The Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We're having a great time with Kimberly Mascaro. Her book is Extraordinary Dreams. Kimberly, I am so interested in everyday practice. I mean, how people start the day, how they bring this stuff together with the requisites of everyday life and helping people not to say, I don't have time for this, because you have to have time, you have to make time for this. For example, you keep a journal, right? You keep a diary.
Yes.
And how often do you write in that book?
Writing.
And when do you write in that book?
Well, for over a decade, I wrote every morning, and then I started to notice I just got a little lazy. This was last year, and someone said, well, why don't you use your voice memo recorder in your phone? Mm-hmm. And so now I've been doing that, and what I like about that a lot, instead of going straight to the pen and paper, is that I can get a little more detail. I can kind of fade back into the dream and then just start, you know, talking when I want, and I get to listen to it. So then I listen to it. So, you know, when I'm having my tea that morning, so that's kind of my practice. I like to wake up after I've recorded the dream, have some tea, and then I listen to it. And while I listen to it, I then transcribe it into my dream diary. And I've also recently switched to one that is now blank, thick blank paper. So instead of the other ones that were more like a notebook, now I get ones from the art store that have that are thick blank paper. So not only do I write the dream as I'm having my tea and listening to myself from the recording device, but I also then try to draw or make a diagram or some type of sketch. From there, if I want even more information, or, you know, more understanding, I've played with the tarot, or maybe better to say I've had a relationship on and off with the tarot for, since I was 18 or 19, so, you know, over 25 years. And I will maybe do a short spread to understand it. And other times, if I want to take it further, I'll do a collage. Or if I have a free day, I may even turn it into a piece of art, depending on the images and how significant I feel it is at the moment and things like that, and how much you know, play I want to you know, how much time I want to play with the dream.
Terrific.
So those are typical practices.
Yeah, they're good. I've made it my practice fervently for a while now to draw from the dream every morning that I possibly can. And this is facilitated by the fact that my youngest daughter, the one who announced her name in a dream, gave me a beautiful set. They are beautiful. They're beautiful different bindings of blank page, thick paper journals, but they're small. When I first took them, I thought, oh, these are too small for drawings. No. They're large enough for almost, let's say, miniature drawings. So I have no excuse not to fill a page with a drawing. And I love them, and they take on this quality of finished art, even though my drawings are pretty sketchy. So I like doing that, and the artist in me likes it, and the boy in me likes it, and I feel satisfied doing that. Then I don't write very much because I can't read my own handwriting. I will go to the computer as soon as possible, even my phone, if that's what I've got handy, and I will type up a report, and then I'll save it in Word. And that gives me an incredible tool. Since I've got, you know, I don't know, tens of thousands of reports over all the years, I have a search engine. So I want to pursue a theme. I can follow it. I've got a running index because I give a date and a title to every dream. And, of course, it's not only dreams that go into the journal. Everything goes into the journal, actually, thoughts, quotations, synchronicity, because, of course, noticing coincidences and symbolic pop-ups from the world around you is part of dreaming, too. And in terms of daily practice with the dreams, you ask tarot. Well, I like tarot. I've always known tarot. I taught a course called Tarot for Dreamers once upon a time. I wrote my own manual, not for publication. So I know tarot. But my preferred way of getting a second reading from a dream, other than sharing it with a friend and practicing our lightning dreamwork game, which you're familiar with now, is just to walk with the dream, just to walk with the dream outside and notice the first unusual thing that pops up and let that be an immediate commentary on the dream. Simple example. I dream I'm in London in World War II, where I've often been in dreams, and I'm in a life that seems very familiar to me, and I'm with a girlfriend who is a nurse. She's a British nurse, and I'm a Royal Air Force pilot. My character's a Royal Air Force pilot, and we're doing our thing in London under the shadow of the war, and I come out of the dream thinking, I'll let the skeptic back in. Well, how real is this in terms of a window into my life? And there's a car parked outside my house I've never seen before, and the license plate says it's a car of a registered nurse. And I'm thinking about the nurse from my dream, and in front of my house for the first and only time is a car of a registered nurse. So I get a little freestyle, a little shiver of recognition. So this is a nod from the world around me. So that's part of practice.
That's great.
I applaud you for recording your dreams. I talk a lot, but I generally prefer not to start talking first thing in the middle of the night when I wake from a dream. So what I do is, if I'm lying in bed, actually, I might actually type it into my phone, which I keep close at hand, and then I'll go and I'll draw in that journal, and that is daily practice. And I'll say to anybody who is not following the practice of keeping a journal of anything, journal of anything that crosses your mind, you're missing out because it's going to become a treasure box. I feel so deprived if I release the practice of journaling for more than a day or two. I feel chuffed. I feel full of energy. I feel full of creative verve if I maintain the practice. So that's for me in relation to dreaming and actually in relation to life itself and keeping in touch with yourself and your soul. Journaling is vital, central practice. I'm glad we're agreed about that. What else? I have a friend who does
something similar, like what you're saying about putting it into, you know, the computer so that you can do a word search or something and find themes rather quickly. I really love that idea.
It's absolutely essential for me, and then I will take material, I put it in different folders, and because, you know, I mean, I will write from a dream. I mean, this is what I do in my own writing practice and in the writing retreats that I lead. I lead something called Writing the State of Conscious Dreaming. It's coming up at Knotswood Hollow in May. It's really a remarkable gathering. I will get people to write from a dream. You have the dream. We're not talking about expanding the dream report per se or staying with the dream. You just take it as the starter dose, take it as the material. Give yourself 10 minutes, 15 minutes, write on, let the characters come alive, see what you've got. So I'm going to do that as well. But the business of entering things in a database like Word, where you have a search engine, is indispensable for me. I wouldn't remotely have access to the material that comes to me immediately if I couldn't type in, you know, Akhenaten or Black Dog or Tornado or whatever it is and see and have all this stuff just pop up in front of me, making its connections across time and place. Another game I play with journals, Kim, which is something we could only do if we kept a journal for a while, is I do bibliomancy. I go back through my old journals. I mean, I'll close my eyes if I'm hunting the database on the computer. I'll close my eyes and going back to a certain year and then going back to a certain title. Or I'll pull out the big ringback binders that contain the printouts or one of the travel diaries in which I've written by hand. And I'll open an old journal at random and I'll look at it and see what is looking at me now. And I find sometimes that a thing recorded from a dream or a synchronicity or a vision or a shamanic journey 10 years ago is right on the money in terms of themes coming into focus in my life right now. Sometimes I have direct evidence of long-range precognition. Sometimes I have something more important. Sometimes I have the sense of an unfolding drama coming to a certain point in the drama right now. And sometimes I have counsel from an old dream on a contemporary situation I can navigate better with the help of the old, so-called old dream, which is now coming into currency because life is catching up with the dream.
And I just love, too, how, you know, our dreams are a source of creativity. That continues to, you know, seems to emerge in all dream conversations, you know, that I have with people about how it gives us, you were talking about how it, you know, can spark writing. And for me, you know, as a longtime artist, it sparked images. Some of them, actually, I wonder if you've seen on my website, Conscious Chimera, I have many images there from dreams that have just seemed to help me create paintings or, you know, I think I mentioned
earlier. Well, we're all going to need to check it out. Thank you for mentioning the website. Give it to us again, and remember, people don't necessarily know how to spell Chimera. So what's your website?
Oh, okay. Should I spell it now?
Yes.
It is www.conscious.com. Conscious chimera.com. So it's ConsciousChimera.com.
ConsciousChimera.com, that's Kim's website. You might want to check it out. Actually, I'm glad you spelled conscious. When my first book, Conscious Dreaming, came out, I couldn't find it in the database of the largest British chain of bookstores, and I discovered it because they left out the first S in conscious. The booksellers couldn't spell the word conscious, so it couldn't be found in their database. That was why. All right, we've enjoyed talking to Kimberly Mascara, author of Extraordinary Dreams. So many ways of dreaming, so many riches to be harvested, so much creativity and healing to be embodied. Kimberly, thank you so much for sharing your own experiences. I hope that our listeners will check out your book, Extraordinary Dreams, and your website, ConsciousChimera.com. And I wish for you and all our listeners, may your best dreams come true.
Thank you, Robert.